ready. Whoops.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. A little bit of an engineering difficulty. We're going to be right with you as soon as we get this straight. I think we're going to get this straight over here. Got Reggie there. Okay, Reggie, there we are. We're straight now. Thank you very much. Clear. All right. Done. Amazing. Done. It's amazing done because of the mechanics of what we have to do to bring this program to you, and we brought it to you. So here we are. Because part of what I believe in is that we should try to bring you the best possible all the time. Best possible. Isn't that a nice phrase? Best possible. Does it have to be perfect? Best possible. What about your own personal ethic? What about your belief in what is best possible for you? In fact, what is a personal ethic? What is it? What is a... Does everybody have a personal ethic? And what are they for? Well, today I want to talk about your personal ethics and human nature. Because I think a personal ethic is the moral foundation on which people build their lives. They assist in decision-making, guiding you to participate in actions and meet your internal moral standards. Now, internal moral standards, this is not, you shouldn't automatically be feeling shame. Many of you, as soon as I say, does it meet your moral standards, you automatically, oh no, boy, he should only know what I did the other night. Your internal moral standards, it's important to determine what are they, how are they. There's a thing called the Hartman Value Profile Test, a very interesting test that was developed in the early 60s that had two things to compare. It said, what is your moral value towards the outside world, and what is your moral value towards the inside world? And it compared the two. It found that when you had one moral value towards the outside world, which is, I don't care, and then towards the inside world, you had another one that said, oh, I care a great deal. That was called a disharmony, and that meant you're going to be unhappy. But if you had a harmony, which is, I don't care about the outside world, I don't care about my inside world, then it was okay. You felt better. Or if you said, I care about the outside world and I care about myself, you felt better. It was when the two of them were out of sync that people felt badly, were unhappy. So what is this ethical system? Ethics are developed throughout life based on a wide variety of factors. They're not absolute rules. For many people, you never even mention your personal ethic. You never define it. You simply consider your inner voice to be all the ethical guidance you need. That feels right. That feels wrong. That's all you need. Intuition plays a large part in finding out what you consider ethical. I just feel it's right. I feel it's wrong. There are several aspects of personal ethics that can vary greatly from person to person. Broken down, your personal ethic can impact on your behaviors, which generally fall into the following framework. Okay, so let's look. Your value of others. Ethics relate considerably to how one person treats another person in terms of respect, concern for their well-being, and recognition of their autonomy. There are three good rules right there. Three good categories. How do you feel about, how do you feel in terms of respect, respecting another person? How do you feel in your concern for their well-being? You may not be concerned for anybody's well-being but your own. And recognition of their autonomy, their right to exist outside of you. This strongly impacts on the depth and longevity of all relationships. You know, if you have a relationship with somebody, but you have, in your personal relationship, you know, you have a kind of a feeling that they're not separate from you, that they're connected to you, and they live in effect only, everything they do is an impact on you. It's going to have an impact on your relationship. They've got to have a similar kind of value. Or your value of society. How one interacts with society as a whole also speaks to your ethical standard. This includes compliance with the law. You know, I mean, it's always fun to cheat a little bit, right? To steal a little something, to take something, to get away with something. It's always kind of nice when you could slide in sideways and get in between the cracks. You could get something for free. Who has those values, you know? There are people I know who would never, ever participate in anything that's dishonest, no matter what it is. If there's a lie or a deception, they will not be involved, even for the benefit of other people. They just won't be involved. So conforming to generally accepted social standards and contributing to the community, which is another part. This is like caring about others. Community, contributing to the community. Do you contribute to the community around you? Do you contribute to the planet in some way? Somebody the other day I know was buying solar panels for their roof of their house to heat their water. And they said, you know, this isn't going to do very much. It's going to be a tiny amount. But it'll save on lumber, which we use to build roofs, and it'll save on water, and it'll save on heat, and it'll save on energy, and it's just a little part that I could do. A personal ethic. Now, again, your value of yourself is another part of your personal ethic. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. This is going to get into a lot of your addictions as well. How a person presents themselves is an indicator of personal ethics. It refers to your trustworthiness, your honesty, your reliability, and your consistency. Are you those four things? Are you trustworthy, honest, reliable, and consistent? Do people perceive you as that? Does somebody look at you and say, you know, but I know you're an honest man? Or if you're a woman, I know you're an honest woman. I know you're an honest person. I know you're consistent. I know you'll be there. I know I could trust you. In other words, you can see the physical manifestation of your personal ethic and behaviors that impact your relationship with others, your role in society, and your personal identity. So, such questions, you know, bring a great deal of debate today about what's right and what's wrong. Let's say you do something that seems to be a violation of your personal ethic. Let's say some part of you says, you know, you shouldn't criticize a child. You got a child, it's your son or your daughter, you diminish them in some way by criticizing them, calling them stupid, or something like that when you get irritated with them. And you know, you say to yourself, oh God, I know I shouldn't be doing that. Or you gossip about someone, and while you're gossiping, there's a little angel on your shoulder saying, oh, you shouldn't be telling a story, because you may even be changing the story a little bit. In fact, we're going to have a guest on the air tomorrow who's going to talk about the water cooler effect, which has to do specifically with the effect of gossiping, the psychology of it. You can violate your personal ethic when you eat a food that you think you shouldn't be eating, like we heard Majid Ali talking about diabetics and giving up sugar and something. So, you know, almost everybody who ever eats large amounts of refined sugar has some feeling about it that they wish I didn't do that. you could connect with somebody out of your loneliness. It could be a sexual connection. It could be you just spend the night with somebody. You want to make contact. Or you could be feeding an addiction of some sort that you have. It could be a food addiction, a sex addiction. It could be a drug addiction, an alcohol addiction, a cigarette addiction, which means compulsive behaviors where you just find it impossible to stop yourself. So here comes a question now. A question is, let's say you have a personal ethic, a belief in certain things, and then you look at it a day later, or while it's happening is even better. And I'm saying something as simple as an infraction, you know, or gossiping, or yelling at somebody, or flirting, or anything it is. You have three different ways that you could deal with it. One is you could see yourself having committed an infraction, an ethical infraction of sorts, and you could stop it and say, you know, I wish I hadn't done that, but it's okay, I'm going to stop, I won't do it again. And you give yourself one, it's like the one cigarette, you know, I had that one, the one drink, if you can. And if you could stick to that, that's one way you could deal with it. You could forgive yourself for this one indulgence. That's one. Sometimes people do what they don't like to do one time just to build up their muscle in resisting it. You see, it's like, I swear I won't call that person because that person's no good for me. And you call them that one time and you hang up and you say, that's it. That's the last time I'll ever speak to them. It's almost like you build up your muscle in a way. I'm giving up smoking forever, and you have that one cigarette. And then you get rid of it when it's halfway down and you don't smoke again. People do that. Now, a second way that people deal with being involved or doing behaviors that they don't like to do that are against their personal ethic is you justify your behavior. You justify it or you rationalize it. And that means you kind of get it out of your mind by saying you're justified in doing just what it is. I was lonely, so I went home with the guy. That was the justification. There was nobody around. I didn't want to be alone on Labor Day, you know? Or when it comes to eating, you know, they had so little choice. My wife didn't want to cook for me, so I had to go to the store and I had to get this. I got that halva bar because it was the best thing I could find because there was no good food there. I had a quart of ice cream because there was nothing else that I could. Rationalization, justification, blaming other people for the reason you're involved in it, right? Or a third approach to dealing with your indulgence in something that you think is not good for you is you flood yourself, and some people flood themselves 100%. You start eating, you have one donut, and you eat 20 donuts. You just don't stop. You don't stop long enough to think and to listen to yourself. Tell yourself you should stop this. You get yourself one drink, you get two drinks, three drinks, four drinks, you get blotto because you don't want to hear yourself curbing yourself. So you indulge so much so you get flooding with indulgence over and over again. You know the people who have high-risk behaviors? To me, some of them, what they're doing is they're flooding themselves with chemicals, actually. Not the chemicals they think they're flooding themselves with, but, you know, once you trigger all of the stuff. I mean, if you think about these behaviors that we have, kind of makes you think, what's going on chemically inside the body? Now, we know that there are certain times that people lose things like serotonin. And if your serotonin is low, your body says, do something for me, do something. I feel like I'm dying on the inside. And your body frequently will move to cortisol. Cortisol, which will be like a solution, because cortisol is this active thing that comes especially accompanied by anger and aggression and stuff like that. So one wonders how we're going to trigger cortisol. One wonders how we're going to get your adrenaline rushing. One wonders how you're going to get your endorphins flowing. And it's almost like all of these things we do is to get a fix of the chemicals that make us feel better. And one of the things we do is if we do moderation, you don't feel the flood of chemicals. You just feel a little bit of them. You get teased by them. So you really have to stop the compulsion of the body to look for these chemicals. So, for example, just taking a little bit of a little bit of an indulgence in something makes your body scream for a whole bunch of indulgence. But some people could do it. Some people could do just a little bit. I remember, but usually that's a good theory and not a good fact. So it is very possible, my friends, that what you do is you say to yourself, you rationalize it, or denial is another way. You could say to yourself, I'm eating this, but it's only yogurt, so I'll have 4 containers. You know, it's only for tonight. I'm going to do it only for tonight. It doesn't count this time. You rationalize and you get yourself out of it, or you flood yourself with it. Think about rationalizing. Does rationalizing play a key role in your life? What is rationalizing? Rationalizing is to ascribe to causes that superficially seem reasonable and valid, but they're actually less unrelated to the true, possible, unconscious, and less credible or agreeable causes. So to rationalize is to attribute some cause, you know, to the reason you're doing something that is not probably the truth, that there's something underneath it. Rationalization. It's to invent a plausible explanation for an act that is based on other causes. You know, rationalizing, you put it outside yourself, justifying the same thing. What do you do? Let me ask you, what do you do? What do you do when you get involved in something you don't think you should be involved in? What do you do? What do you do when you're... I knew somebody who once... just for a long time, he got angry at a storekeeper, and he picked up something out of a store, and he put it in his pocket, and he walked out because he was angry. And this very same guy who had developed quite a bit hadn't done that in a long time, and he was plagued by it. He had to plan to go to the store to be able to replace it so that he could put it right back where he found it. But the spot where he had taken it from had been filled. So now he was going to have to put down 2 bracelets where there would have been an empty spot. So he had to plant it so that when the person who was checking would see now 2 bracelets instead of 1 in that spot. So he had to do it just as scary as he did the first one, you know, taking the first one. But he had to return it because he wanted to stick with his ethic. He wanted to stick with what he believed in. What do you believe in? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take your calls today. We're going to talk about your personal ethic, not just the ethic, the political ethic. I don't want to talk about that. We understand that. We have questions all over the politics about ethics now. You know, is it right to have a 17-year-old daughter who's pregnant? Ethical, 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 moral, moral, moral. You know, is it, do you have a right to judge somebody's sex life? Do you want to be in personal life? I care so much, not your values with the world, but your values with yourself. What do you believe in for yourself? What's good for you? I saw a young woman earlier today who came to see me and said, you know, there's the real me and the fake me. She said, the real me is this very kind of small, inefficient person. The unreal me is the one who gives advice to everybody. And the way she gives advice is so loving and clear, but she advises everyone. And why does she advise everyone? Because she believes that she has to be an advisor, because the position of advisor makes her feel more powerful and strong. Where the position of being like, you know, reality, which is none of us really know anything, and admitting it, and then looking at somebody else and really appreciating their autonomy and their separateness, that's a whole different thing. It's a very difficult thing to do. Hey, telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We're going to continue with the program today, but we are going to take your calls. We're going to take your calls, and we're talking about your personal ethic and your personal value system. The value system you have. Now, it's very possible that you're going to be tempted to talk about somebody else's value system. I don't want you to do that. I mean, you could do that, but let's not do that. Because that's one of the easy tricks we use. We will judge others and talk about how bad they are for having value systems that are unlike ours. You know, that they are judgmental. So a chemically dependent person cannot ask for help because they're too afraid. Because they're afraid that if they ask for help, that they're not going to be able to lead up to it and accept it in some way. So very often it's hard for them to say, I'm powerless in this situation. Where are you powerless? Where are you? What does rationalizing really do for you? 212-209-2900. We're going to start taking your call, and we're going to continue this discussion today. Hello, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
No calls yet.
Okay, 212-209-2900. Let's get back to rationalizing. You stop communicating by making attempts to understand that somebody is doing something that they don't like, and you don't like it about yourself. Now, the problem with you involving yourself in something that you don't like doing is that you have to blind yourself in order to do it. Do you ever get that feeling that you have to be blind? Well, you know, it's not easy nowadays, my friends, because we're living a lot longer and there's a lot more conscious life than we ever had before. You know, life expectancy has gone up amazingly. It's like the 10th year in a row. It's just going up higher. It's an overall life expectancy of 78.1 years now overall. Life expectancy for women is 80.7 years, and for men it's 75.
Okay, we got two calls.
Right? It's kind of amazing, isn't it? Life expectancy for men, 75. Life expectancy for women, 80. 80.7, 75.4. You're going to have to be around here a long time, folks. Let's take one of your calls. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yes. Well, I've noticed that you're speaking on a topic that doesn't seem to get as much interest as I would like, and that being one of ethics and morals.
You would like people to show more interest in their...
Well, yeah, I mean, popular society has sort of not... I don't know, I feel like ethics has sort of taken a back seat. I'm not really sure if the average American really even knows what the term means anymore.
Well, what does it mean to you? Talk about yourself, and maybe we could teach people a little bit about how you use it in your own life.
Well, you know, the proverbial do unto others thing, I mean, I think that's a good starting point for ethics. And, I've always felt that I had a very strong inherent sense of ethics and morals. Like, I've been self-employed, I've been a business owner for a long time. Then again, you know, I feel that as such, and as an active member of society, the way our infrastructure of society is today, I'm not so sure that we make it easy for people to maintain honesty or a certain level of
ethics. What's your name? Can I have your name?
My name's Suzette.
Suzette, so let's try something, okay? You just went from talking about yourself to talking about society in general again, which is something that people frequently do. And they do it because there is something about, and you're proving to me, that one of the things that people are always afraid of doing is looking at themselves exclusively and talking about themselves. Forget about society for a moment.
Well, no, I want to talk about myself. And,
sure,
and
I know you do. I know you do, but you slid off into some kind of general ethic about society.
Well, I guess I'm just giving you background in terms of like what I've been thinking of lately and why I've been thinking of ethics.
Your own personal ethics.
Right.
What do you believe in? How do you believe you are responsible for the well-being of another person? Are you?
Well, that's a very vague and general question. Am I responsible for the well-being? Yes. There's all levels to which you could take this. Am I responsible if I see someone in pain or suffering? Am I responsible to do everything within my capabilities of using that pain or suffering? Absolutely.
You feel that, right? You don't think, well, that's theirs and this is mine and I could get away from it.
No.
I have to deal with it in some way.
No, I, I get involved. I find myself getting involved much, much more than the average, my average compatriot. You know,
What do you think makes that difference, Suzette, between you? What do you think you have a dose of?
I think it's cultural. I was raised, I shouldn't say I was raised. I was part of the punk rock movement for, you know, a long time. Like when I was a kid, I had green hair, you know, and this was going back like 18 years ago. Before any of that was fashionable, I would listen to punk rock music, and I think I subscribe to some of the ethics. I'm a vegetarian, I'm a vegan, you know, and but I think that the punk rock thing gave me a voice. It gave me the ability to say, I don't care if I'm different. I don't care what I'm doing stands out. I don't care if, I'm doing something that may be considered a faux pas, such as helping a person who's lying down on the ground, who's, you know, in the sun. Like the other day, for instance, I was walking down the street. This gentleman was passed out. I don't know if it was drugs or alcohol related, but his pants were down around his ankles. He was, this is like a ghetto neighborhood that I happen to live in. He was in the sun. And I thought, this guy's going to fry if I don't get him out of the sun and give him some water. People were walking right past him, stepping over him, you know. And I stopped. And I'm by no means perfect. I was actually, when I was talking about honesty and ethics in society, I was going to tell you where mine stops. And I was going to tell you how I feel guilty because I lie sometimes, you know. But this is...
And when, when you do, thank you for that, by the way. I think you made one big impression, which is I hope people are more conscious when they stop for other people. Some people do feel that connection with people. Do you live with anybody?
Oh, she hung up.
Oh, she's gone. What a pity. I wonder why she hung up at the moment. Well, maybe she'll call back. Suzette, I wanted to take you one step further, but Suzette said something important about what is the value you have for other people, you know, when you see other people around you. But I was just about to move in a little closer to ask her about her own personal values with other people. Sometimes when you have people around that you could easily, you know, you could easily take care of people who are at a distance, but you don't want to take care of them if they're up too close. Some people who have such compassion for other people really are reluctant to live with anyone at all. They don't want to be that close because they feel like they're possessed by having to take care of another person. Other people take it on and say, this is just a role I have. You single mothers know about that. You know, even you don't even have to be single to know about that. You know what it's like to feel that commitment to the well-being of a child. And just to feel the commitment, it's there, you know? Not a resentful commitment, but a real commitment. Oh, yeah, and this is my child. Oh, yeah, and these are my children. So the question becomes, can you separate those two, or do you have to separate those two? That's what I want to talk to all of you about when we get back from our break. We're going to take a short break. Oh, I want to... You know, when I talk about my ethic is faltering or I'm losing it or when I feel like I'm not owning up to myself, it always reminds me of a particular song, which I'm going to play for you today just because it's one of those songs that... It's just one of those songs. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, my friends, I'll be playing for you one of my favorite songs. And we'll get back and talk with you on air. I'll be right back. All yours, Reggie. Well, let me see. You know, Michael's not... There we go.
Hi, this is Jake Sufnarowski, former talent buyer at Wetlands Preserve. When I'm not driving my gas guzzling SUV, texting my friends in my handheld mobile device, or listening to my local Clear Channel affiliate, I'm definitely tuned to WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York City, 99.5 FM.
At the Democratic and Republican National Conventions, thousands of politicians and power brokers will descend on security ring conference centers to jockey for control of their parties and then campaign for the control of this country. Pacifico Radio will bring you unconventional coverage, asking politicians questions they don't hear from other media, broadcasting voices from the protest outside, and bringing our own analysts onto the microphones to dissect the platforms and speeches. I'm Mitch Jezerich. Join me and the rest of the Pacifica crew for unconventional coverage from the floor, from the streets, and from this Pacifica radio station.
Coverage for the Republican National Convention will start on Monday, September 1st through Thursday, September 4th, 7 p.m. till midnight, only on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. Whenever you're ready.
Right, here I am. Yes, I'm right there. Yeah. Good. We're doing a little differently today. This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind. Here's what I wanted you to have, but I just can't get it to you today. Get him love. Anyway, coming back with you. 212-209-2900 is our number. I'm not going to play that piece of music for you today because it froze in the computer and we didn't have it. So 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there. You're on the air. What is that noise?
Let's try again.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. This is a tricky day today, I could tell. Are you there, Reggie?
Yeah, I'm here. I don't know why they can't not answering.
Yeah, wait, they
all right, let's try this
can't
again.
Hear the connection.
Okay, jackpot.
Yeah,
jackpot.
There we go. Hi there, you're
okay.
On here.
Hey, peace and blessings. It's Rashida here. How are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Rashida. Thanks.
I am so grateful for my evolution from being, I was saying, in my early 20s. I'm 59 now. To be very judgmental, very right-wrong oriented, where now I've come to know that there really is no right or wrong. What I know is, does it work for me? Like, war doesn't work for me. It's not right or wrong. It just doesn't work for me to see people slaughtered and whatever. So with that type of mentality, I really come, I'm just so proud of me with the non-judgment.
Well, Rashida, let me ask you something. What happens to you when you see somebody who's doing something that is so far beyond your ethical value, like somebody who's hurting somebody, or somebody who's hurting a child? What happens to the inside of you? Because part of you also have of your own ethical value system that you let people be who they are.
Okay, so if I see someone hurting a child, that doesn't work for me.
Right, so
I would
therefore
intervene on the child's behalf. Not because they're wrong, because on a spiritual level, there's an agreement between that energy that is the child and the one that is the adult.
All right, so now let's say you have an adult man being abused by a wife. Mm-hmm. Would you intervene?
I would intervene, yes. I absolutely would. I would intervene in a sense of speaking with that person and the man, the woman, you know, they're people that I can speak to, or if they're strangers in the street, I would intervene in a way that I could intervene.
How would you do it?
If they were on the street?
Yes, let's say a woman's yelling at her husband, right?
Oh, she's yelling at her husband. I wouldn't intervene with that because I don't see, unless I see him allowing that abuse. It doesn't make sense for me to intervene.
But if she's yelling at a child.
I have intervened with that.
Yeah, you see what I mean? So it gets to be a certain.
And it's not right or wrong. It's just that doesn't work for me. See, I have to know it like that. I can't know that it's not right, because this child, see, I'm of a different mindset, Armand. Like, they say children don't ask to be born, but what I know is that not only do they ask to be born, they choose their race, their gender, their situation, or the whole nine. So what looks is always a bigger picture, and what looks like the abuse on a spiritual level, I know that there's something happening. Other than that, however, I am having a human experience, so the human part will kick in. Not to say that the mother is right or wrong, but it's injurious to the child. Child needs to be removed from that, all that cursing children out and things of that. I've spoken on it and got cursed out. I speak on people throwing garbage in the street. They'll throw something. I said, you know what? We have trash cans on the corner.
So one of your ethics is to not be silent in the face of injustice. That when you see something not right, you can't be silent, because for Rashida, that doesn't work.
Exactly.
Because if you are silent, and I'm sure, Rashida, you've been the other way. Let's say you're out with your parents, and you just shut your mouth because you don't feel like telling them what you really believe. Do you ever do that?
Never. I thought I was the white sheep of the family.
Right. They don't.
Yeah, I never. That was a problem. Like, why don't you be quiet? Like, when I told my brothers and sisters at about the age of 9, there's no Santa Claus. Come on, you know Mom and Dad buying this stuff. And now my father said, okay, that's it for you. No Christmas for you.
But no more Christmas for you.
I was always the rebel, and I love it. That's who I am, and I see my gift as being very healing because I have to come. Although it doesn't work for me, I have to still come with non-judgment, just remove from the harm factor from it and, you know, come with the non-judgment.
Thank you, Rashida, once again.
Thank you, Aman, for all that you do, the service that you render. Peace and blessings.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, talking about your personal ethics and what you do and how you deal with it. 212-209-2900, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand, how are you?
Good.
My name's Pat. An interesting discussion. I used to consider myself an ethical person, but I don't any longer. But I don't find it really problematic. As an example.
Give me an example of that. Yes, what used to be problematic, what used to be an ethic that you have learned since is not a necessary ethic, or even if it is, you don't care, you break it, and you're okay.
Well, as an example, I would never pilfer from, let's say, an employer. It would not happen. No paper clips, no nothing going home. But then I went through several years where the employer actually decided to renovate the business with the workers in that renovation with the dust and maybe asbestos and everything. And even though people ended up in the hospital, the employer didn't care. So at that point, that was like a deal breaker for me. If you don't care about us, then I don't care about you. If you're going to make us sick, then we're going to make you take care of us, which means if I do need something, I will take it. So I realized, you know, with that goes the loss of being ethical, because an ethical person, I don't think, would reason that way. But on the other hand,
Pat,
you really
don't think there was any
me.
Way. You don't think there was any way of going to the man himself, the boss, and saying, look, the people are getting sick and you're going to lose a lot. You're losing a
he
lot
was
of
done.
Spirit.
It was done, and it came down to time and money, and we don't care.
Mm.
And so that's like an example.
I hear you. So now you carry that everywhere you go. That same boss now freed you to be able to pilfer anywhere
you go. I don't carry it everywhere. I wait for someone to screw me over.
So if somebody screws you over, you steal from them.
Well. Another example was I hired a contractor, and the contractor, we made a verbal agreement, and there was urgency involved. I needed such and such work done and so forth and so on, and it was understood. Well, he played a game where he needed money, couldn't do the work without money, gave him more and more money, and before you know it, we're like 3 times over the time limit. And the work still isn't done, but he has all the money. So I took his tools. And I didn't feel badly about it either, because I felt like I was actually being killed slowly, and there's no one around to help me. And I kind of felt like he got exactly what he deserved. And not only that, you know, I warned him, you know, you have to finish the work. So with this came the loss of my title as being an ethical person. On the other hand, some people say I'm, like, extraordinary because they can see I'm very proactive. Things happen in the street. I have no problem coming forward, helping people, calling police, intervening, all kinds of things where a lot of people, you know, just don't score very, very well. They don't want to be involved. They have absolutely no problem. Probably even saved a few lives.
So you've redefined your morality. You've redefined it. You know, where one thing is, in the world of fairness, I will always be fair. In a world of unfairness, I will try to be fair. But if I can't be fair, I will certainly respond in kind. I will not be a dish rag. I won't be somebody who could just walk all over. I will fight for myself because, in a way, It's like I was in a taxi one day and a man started bad-mouthing some people of color. And even though I objected to it, he just kept on doing it. So I just got out of the cab and I refused to pay him. I stopped it right there and I would not pay for this ride. And it became, you know, quite an embroilment. But I just said I got to do my piece. You know, I've got to somehow kind of uncondition this in some way. I felt not only was I getting, I didn't want to get even, I didn't want to keep the money. But it was like, for you, it's not about the tools, was it? It wasn't about just getting even. It was like you were trying to say to somebody, you can't do this to everybody.
I think that's what it is. Because when I look very, very closely at the employer and I look very closely at the contractor, I see people who seem to feel that I'm going to do anything I can to you. I'll do anything. I mean, this employer, he almost put one person on a ventilator. You know, there are people out there who will essentially kill you if they think they can get away with it.
Yeah,
and my position was, if you're bad enough to think that you're going to kill people, well, you can take care of them. You know, you could provide a few this and a few that if you're going to hurt them to that extent, if you're that bad.
Boy, you must have had... let's take this back just a little bit. What was it like in childhood? Where did fairness come into play regarding your childhood?
Well, fairness. I think I have a very good sense of ethics, and I think I tried to apply them. Matter of fact, I thought as a child, you know, I'm going to try to be a saint, and I was considered the saintly child.
Which child were you, the second?
I was the second. Yeah, the birth order. I was
right. In the birth order, the saints usually are second. And you're the second saint child. You're going to be the saint. And so you did good around your family? You took care of everybody?
I absolutely did. But one of the things my parents didn't tell me is that when you walk around like that, it will attract a lot of people who will try to harm you. I didn't really stress that. I didn't think they wanted to give me any kind of hang-ups or anything. I would find out. And I did find out. I mean, there are actually a lot of malevolent types out there. I mean, pure malevolence.
Pure malevolence, when they see a sainthood or innocence, which is what I think you're really talking about, they see it as an opportunity to abuse it in some way or exploit it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's one part of it, but I don't think that's what the employer was about.
No, but
I don't
as a
think
kid,
that's what the contractor was about.
What happened
either.
To you as a child? What happened to you as a kid in your innocence? Yeah, you were a saint, and then who violated it?
Well, truthfully, I would just say the world of adults. I think
all
the world
of adults
that I experienced as a child, other than my parents, once I get outside the house, is just predation.
Yeah, and predation because you were like this person going out there, you know, who was like a flower child. You know, you're saying, hey, come on, all you need is a little love. Let's be nice to each other.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they see you and they say, okay, come on up to my studio, little girl, and I'll show you love.
Well, it was in a lot of different areas, but I realized very quickly.
Did you feel like you were romantically abused as well? Because, you know, with that kind of innocence, usually you fall prey to somebody who can easily be harmful.
To me, the greater damage was kind of done on gender-wise and racial-wise.
Gender-wise because...
Gender-wise, because of going to school, you know, adults who physically attack you, and I'll see a little girl going by. Racially, because, you know, if you grow up in a predominantly Caucasian neighborhood, certain neighborhoods, you're targeted there. So you kind of get it from both areas.
Yeah.
And if you don't learn how to toughen up and put away the saintly thing. You will. If I hadn't learned how to toughen up, I would be dead.
I hear, and so as many of the people I know who grew up in those kind of environments, I congratulate them as well for having gotten through, Pat. You know, so what you say about what happened to you later is you still had an ethic, but when you went to work, You know, that part of you who learned to tough it out in the streets came up when somebody said to you, I'm just going to push you around. And you're going to say, oh, no, you're not just going to push me around.
I think that's what it is because I remember I had a eureka moment where I was actually, like, being bullied. Mm-hmm. And I used to go home, and I was in such torment over, like, being bullied. Actually, it's happened in a workplace. And when I turned, the person was actually engaging in mirth at my torment in the bullying. I mean, they were actually, you know, like they were euphoric. And it occurred to me, if you can experience such mirth, such orgasmic pleasure at harming another human being in bullying, then you're tough enough to take some of it back. And that was my moment, I would say, where things shifted.
Yeah, I hear. And the truth of it is, I'll tell you, the truth of it is, Pat, the people who make fun of people and who have mirth at the expense of someone else, you know, they're usually not tough enough to take it. They're usually the weakest of the people. It's sad to think of it, you know? Hey, you know, I did connect with that little piece of music. I'm going to play a short piece of it for you as well. And then we're going to continue taking your calls. But here it is.
Thank you, Armand.
It's my pleasure, Pat. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there. Let's take another call. Hello there.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Armand?
Yes.
Okay, hi. It's a pleasure listening to you every day. It's an honor talking to you. God bless you. You're doing such a wonderful stuff.
Are you speaking to me from an automobile?
No, actually I'm parked, and I have you on a speaker, but I'm going to put it 1 second. Just hold on 1 second.
Sure. Thank you so much.
This should be much better.
Oh, much better.
It is, but no, I don't hear you good.
Yes, now. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Armand.
Yes.
I've been listening to you like it's my religion. I'm from Pakistan. My name is Ghulam Hussein. I have a different belief system and value, ethics, what you're talking about. And you touch my life in so many ways. And I listen. When I see somebody, especially a man, messing with a woman, and my belief system, it's wrong, wrong, wrong. And I got beat up so many times doing that. But that's one addiction, I guess. I got over with, and now I can't stop helping my relatives. Some of them are very distant and some are very close, but whatever money I make, I'm in America, I have 2 full-time jobs, I make good money, I'm not a rich man, but I have an old pair of shoes, 2-year-old, and I have 2 shirts and stuff like that, and I don't know if it's right or wrong. From my point, it's right to give people who don't have it, but then I have nothing for myself, and my American wife complains about it, and I can't stop eating peanut butter.
Yeah, I know. I understand what you mean. I understand what you mean, because it becomes one of those difficult things.
I'm going to hang up and listen to you, because it's
okay,
where
sure.
You're listening to you.
Sure. See,
okay.
Ghulam is caught in one of those cultural things that happen to people, especially when you're here in America and you're making money. I mean, he may have 2 pairs of shoes, where his relatives who are calling him have 1 pair of shoes, you know? So they consider that he's a rich man here, but of course he's trying to make his life here. And once you get caught in that trap, you know, like they have in so many countries, like Algeria, like Pakistan. Once you get caught in that trap, you kind of, it's hard to distinguish what's right and what's not right. It really is. I would say, yes, go live for yourself. But I also understand the family coming to you. But it's very important somewhere in life, Ghulam, to learn how to say no. And to take a diet of taking care of people. To step back and don't take care of anybody for 6 months. And say, for 6 months, I just want to see how I will be. Because very often we get addicted to taking care of people. And we don't know if we have any meaning or significance once we stop. So I would recommend to you to put it on hold for a while and to see what happens. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there.
This is Leora.
Hello, Leora.
I have to say something to you.
Sure.
Armand, you have a cosmic psychic beam of light, because what you're talking about today is the month of Elul, which is the Jewish month name, we are supposed to be taking stock of our ethics, of our value system, and your topic today gave me, I also do some lecturing on this, a whole outline and a consciousness. Either you're really a universal person if you were able to touch into this moment and calendar. Just started yesterday, this Jewish month.
Yeah, so I understand. Well, I thank you very much.
But I want to talk also.
Sure.
So you talk about ethics. In terms of ethics, first, would you give a definition? When you talk about ethics, values, morals, I mean, where does that come from? Does it, it doesn't come from the culture in terms of, because we have a combination of unethical, immoral. But where does that inner, we call it the panemius, where is that core?
Well, I put it as the moral foundation on which people build their lives. So where it comes from, you know, it could come from, like Freud called it, the superego. You know, it could come from conscience. It could come from religious values. But it's the ones you accept. What you say is right for you. Like Rashida said, it's right for me, you know. And what's right for me is being fair. What's right for me is taking care of myself. What's right for me is taking care of my fellow person. So that's where it comes from. But listen, just want to let you know before we go much further, got a number of calls on the line, and I do want to be able to take them. So make a point with me, would you?
All right, I'll make a point with you because I've spoken about this before. In terms of your moral agenda or ethical, there is the environmental conditioned self, and then there's who you truly are. And the key point is that I feel that I had to have a responsibility to discover through experience and various other means, to discover who Leora is in terms of my true self and who I'm not. And I know the difference in when I'm acting where. And the minute I'm in the conditioned self, or like with my dear mother Molly, she had a certain pitch and a tone of voice that I absorbed. And there are times, it's coming less, that I know it and I change right away. So the point is, we really need to discover the conditioned patterning of making a list of our strengths and our undeveloped side of us, and then take one at a time. What do you think about that?
I kind of agree with you completely. I think it's right about taking one at a time, especially you can't be too judgmental about yourself and your own variations on an ethical theme. Thank you for calling in. Thank you. 212-209-2900. Time for one more call. I do want to get one more in here. Remember, tomorrow we're going to be doing a show about gossip, and then Thursday one more, and then we're going to be moving on to our fun drive. 212-209-2900. Let's take one more call. Hi, this is Armand Miller on the air.
Hi. First, I want to say I really loved all your callers. I'm number four, and I had to sit through them all. But I love the guy with the peanut butter. That's the best.
Yeah.
I guess I think about ethics a lot, and I guess most of the people that listen to WBAI I think we have a lot of similar personality types that listen to this show. But one thing that I've observed about people on the left and people on the right is that I think one of our weaknesses is that we don't really, and I'm talking very generally, but I notice that a lot of people on the left care about more their unrelated family and care passionately about it, but when it comes to their actual real family members, they don't really care about them so much or take care of them.
Oh, what an interesting perception. Is that true of you?
Well, I think that it's true of a lot of the people that I hang around with, and it's true of my family. Like, my mother made her cause in life, you know, the black cause. But
so your mother was a black activist, and
yeah,
your mother was saying we were going to work for justice all around, and she kind of neglected the kids around this doing. And that's a very interesting concept, because
you want to hear one more interesting thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Because I'm an activist, and this is really, really, you know, I don't go out and look, honestly, I don't look for trouble, okay? But I met the nicest man that I've ever met, And everything's wrong because first he's 20 years older than me, and that's an issue for my poor mother. And secondly, he's African American, and that's another issue. And it's very strange because in my whole life she dosed us with the unfairness. And
Lily, can I hear it? Because we're just about to run out of time.
Okay. Well, anyway, so I just wanted to kind of point that out to people on the left that we also need to take care of our family as well as our outer family.
I thank you very much for calling in. What's your name?
It's Gwen.
Gwen, thank you so much for being here. This is Armand DeMille with you. Hey, listen. Ah. WBAI 99.5 FM. More of this stuff. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friend. Reggie, just give a little taste of this while my guitar gently weeps. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1, my friends. Gently weeps. I don't know why nobody told you how to unfold your love. I don't know how someone controlled you. Labeled and sold you. I look at the world and I notice it's turning while my guitar gently weeps. With every mistake